Hello and welcome to the Comedy Club podcast. I am Dustin Kaufman. With me, returning to the Comedy Club, returning to the podcast, Mr. Derek Stroop.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Bro, thanks for being here.
Yeah.
What a weekend.
Yeah, so exciting.
Just sold out.
Yeah.
Every show in advance.
Yeah, that's right.
We just promoted Lawrence all week.
That's right. Feels good. You know, I've got to this club. You've got to see it's been that slow climb over about, I think it's 4 years. And every year there was a little bit more. Every year, I think last year I might have sold out one out of the four or something or got close to it. So it's just nice. The trajectory is where I want to be.
I love that.
Yeah. So it's going great. It's going good.
I love seeing the growth. I love, I don't even know if we mildly talked about it. Like, first time I saw you, this is the second time. If you didn't see Derek's first interview, we were still doing an hour on the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
So go back, check it out. It may have been one of our first solo interviews.
I think so.
Too, as well. But first time I saw you, you were just in Denver performing at some small club. I went down to see the festival.
That's right.
It wasn't even part of the festival. And I'm like, bro, you're funny. Come work. I think we even comped the room the first couple
Absolutely.
Times. Hey, just come see this guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to like him.
Yeah. No, I was telling my opener, Ed Bell, last night. I go, Dustin found me the old-fashioned way, where you go to a festival as industry, and you go watch shows. And I wasn't even on one of the shows that was in the festival, because High Plains never showed me love like that.
Wait, let's stare at the camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Never showed me love like that.
That one.
I think I hosted the 2 years. And then, anyways, I was doing a 15 or 20 minute set at Voodoo, is what it was called at the time. And you came in and watched me. And then that's exactly what happened. You invited me. And that's the way it should go. That's like believing in somebody. Because, you know, I'm sure you got a calendar full of people where you go, these people are going to sell tickets. But you also got to have a farm league. I mean, because these guys aren't going to, the arc for comedians, as we all know, it's not big. You know, only a small percentage are going to be here for 30 years. There's a lot of people that are going to be a blip in the radar. So that's just a smart investment on your part. Because I've had other Kansas City, other clubs come for your boy. And I'm not budging because, you know, you dance with the person that brought you. And, you know, I believe that. So,
yeah. And I feel like I made a friend out of it.
That's, you for sure did.
All right, we definitely had a farm. I've even worded it like that. Our first year or two was definitely a bit like people that I believed in.
Yeah.
I saw coming up and mm-hmm. then like, yeah, 3, 4, 5 years later, selling 1,000 tickets,
Yeah. And what's the worst thing that happens? It doesn't pan out. What are you're the first person to ever lose sleep over giving somebody a chance?
Yeah.
I doubt it. You know, so, you know, it's a win-win. And, I mean, it, you know, it's paid off for you more than not.
I will say our predecessors with Stanford's.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Glaziers, as much shit as they got, at one point, they knew how to run clubs.
That's right.
And whether they paid right or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will never forget that they were the first club to headline Jim Jefferies.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, he always worked for them until you just couldn't work for them anymore.
That's right.
And when people just stopped working for them. But when we opened this, I'm like, I'm just going to do everything the opposite of they did.
Yeah.
But that one thing really stood out to me mm-hmm. of like, hey, and give people that opportunity.
That's right.
If you believe in people, give them that. Because people just need doors.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. A shot.
And it's a trickle up, too. Because if other clubs see you headlining good clubs, mm-hmm. they're going to go, oh, well, let's get him. Then you start working more.
And club owners talk like comedians talk.
We do. Agents don't want us to, but we definitely
Yeah,
do.
Absolutely. Because you got to find out the truth. If you want to know about a comic, or I'm sure if somebody's being a headache, you reach out to another and you go, hey, and they go, no, this is how this goes. And you go, okay, just making sure, you know.
And I love the most that you did this on your own.
Yeah.
On your own accord. I'm not going to even mention names. It's not even important, but you used to regularly open for a very popular comedian.
Yeah, that's right.
With a very religious crowd.
Yep.
and would sell just thousands of tickets.
Absolutely.
And I would be like, why are you not capitalizing? Why are you not getting them to follow you? Why capitalizing? And you said, because that's not my crowd.
That's right.
And I want to do this on my own.
That's right.
And motherfucker,
yeah,
you done it.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to be clean, but I wasn't, like, I've never labeled myself as a Christian comic, and I didn't want to be put in that situation. And I appreciate you noticing that. And even, you know, Dustin, it even goes as far to as Denver. I was telling a friend of mine not long ago, I was in Denver for a decade and still came out with my original identity. I'm very proud of that. You know, in Denver, I didn't get all the love that I always wanted in Denver because I never did jokes for the back of the room. I'm not that comic. I did these middle of the country southern jokes, and because it's who I am, it's what I know, with my ranty, a little bit of edge on it. And some of the Denver comedians, they didn't really understand, but I was never practicing for them. I had dreams of the road. And so I'm proud of constantly keeping my identity, you know, and I did that in Denver, doing it in New York City. I live in New York City now. New York City. We're just talking about this. Dustin's like, I don't know if you know this. I'm like, no, I know the salsa every time. But yeah, and even being in New York City, I keep my identity, you know, which I'm proud of.
Is Denver a scene heavily booked by the comedians?
I mean, I wouldn't really know. I'm, you know, I feel like a made man being at the Cellar. I got passed by SD at my JFL set. And so I work that in the New York City Comedy Club. But the ecosystem of New York City comedy is you know, they're running it. The comics are running a lot of the rooms. And that's a really great thing. I'll tell you the truth, Dustin. I am thankful that I didn't have to come up through the New York City comedy scene. Oof. And I mean, there's some that have done it and they're great. And there's a lot that don't do it anymore. But I'm glad I came up somewhere like Denver because it seems brutal. I'm in New York City in a great situation. I work the Cellar every week. I work the New York Comedy Club when I want to. It's really ideal. But to come up in that place, not easy.
It's one thing that I tell my comics here, the up and coming comics, is I don't care if the back of the room is laughing.
That's right.
I don't listen to that.
That's right.
Especially at the mics. Like, I listen to the front. I listen to the people, the customers, and we actually have customers come to our open
mic. Yeah, that's right.
So I can.
You have a great open mic here. Yeah. No, and I agree. You know, I just saw a comic today make a Facebook status, and he said, I'm tired of being a comics comic. I would like some people to buy some tickets. And, I mean, does that not wrap up what we're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. And I'm you know, Noah Reynolds, a young comic in Denver, who's very funny, and I'm giving him a shout out. The last thing I said to him when I left Denver, and I don't know how he took it or if he'll see this and understand, but I said, don't write jokes for the back of the room. It just won't get you anywhere. It'll get you more group chats and more hangs, but you're not going to be doing comedy for people that are going to be buying tickets. Because, you know, I've never been necessarily a comics comic. I'm not, like, you know, disliked, but I'm not writing for those people. And I think that that's important.
I'm doing the math here in my head, and you're just adorable little butterball of a baby.
Gosh.
Yesterday. Just, yeah. And he's 6 months old.
Yeah, man. He's a ham.
And he's the cutest.
Gosh.
And I, you know, this is like the second or third time that I've just seen a little baby or a really little, and because I have two, you know, it's like, I'm a dad, I'm a papa, and I'm just like, they melt me. And I'm so glad I don't have one. Mine are old, a little bit older than you know, 10 or 11, but I'm past that baby thing, right? But my God, it just melts my heart. And I'm doing the math in my head. You moved to New York a year ago, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's 6 months old, which means you moved to New York expecting.
Yeah, well, found out about 2 weeks after we moved to New York.
Okay.
So I moved to New York November 17th, and I think we found out December 1st, something like that.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So, or we might have found out December 5th.
Do you think that would have altered your decision to move there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I believe everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it would have halted everything because out of fear. I would have gone, oh, because everybody would have told me, you can't go to New York City with a kid. You can't, yada, yada, yada.
You would have just had a xenophobic reaction.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, no, and then we found out, right after we got there, and it's worked out great. I mean, it really has. The hospitals there are great.
Okay, good.
We've figured out everything. Now, we're not going to raise him there. I'm going to move to Nashville here soon. But if I didn't have a family, I would live in New York City maybe for the rest of my life. And it shocks people. I mean, really, especially my style of comedy, who I am, being a country guy. But I was just telling, there's a pretty famous photographer in New York City. Her name's Mindy. She's been photographing people for over 20 years. She does every big name you know. She's from Alabama. And we were having this conversation. She's lived in Brooklyn for 22 years. I am a country dude who's proud of where I'm from, and I'm Southern, but I love the big city. And I love combining them. Like, I love living in New York City, and I'm making biscuits and gravy. And I'm getting my grandmother send me homemade jam. And I'm still kind of keeping my little world how I keep it. But I love to be around the action. I love to, you know, when you grow up in Harvest, Alabama, I remember being so frustrated that my parents turned off all the lights in the house at 7:30 at night. And everything closed at 9 p.m. And on Sunday, I could barely buy a soda. I go, if I could just get somewhere where there's a little action. So I would live in New York City forever if I didn't have a baby boy and a wife, but Nashville seems like a better place to put my roots down.
You just don't want to raise him in New York.
Yeah. When I tell New Yorkers that, sometimes they get offended. They go, well, what's the deal? And I go, well, I grew up with a creek and a yard and ball fields across the two. And I want that same environment because that's what I know.
And you can get a yard, but you're not in the city.
No, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
I could go to New Jersey and drive 25, 30
getting
minutes.
To school, you're not going to, you know, you're probably not getting a creek and a yard like a half mile from the elementary school.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. And to me, and every parent has ideal situations. And for me, that's...
I understand.
Yeah.
I moved back from L.A., expecting. Yeah. I totally, you just, you know, I wanted to look, just childhood memories of like Sunday football and hot chili in the winter and just things like that, you know, and I just
get closer to Mama Bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom lives 90 miles from Nashville. That means a lot to me as well.
How many times a week are you getting on stage in New York?
I'm usually only home for 3 days, sometimes four. And it's usually 3 days. I usually get home on Monday and leave Thursday morning. And one of those 3 days I'll get on. But when you're working the cellar, and I'm in good favor with Esty, I'll do 4 to 5 to 6 sets in a night.
Okay.
So it's basically two nights in one.
So you can, like, really work out material.
You're 100% right, to the point where I'm not somebody that can go on cold. Like, I'll actually do the first two shows of the night and kind of be in my classics and get my courage worked up and get my motor running. And then those last four shows, I'm going to shoot from the hip. It's hard to roll out of a taxi and fire off new material. But that's the great thing about 5 or 6 sets in a night. And also, the cellar has, you know, it's upped my game. I feel like I'm a quicker, smarter comic being there because New York City expects that. And the peers that I'm around, it's like I'm constantly, you know, when Todd Berry is in the back of the room or Louis C.K., I'm pushing myself. There is no, and I'm not one to mail it in normally, but the peers, the people in New York City are all so talented. It makes you rise to.
Well, there's no lack of talent in Nashville right now.
No.
That Zanies is just flooded with some of the best and biggest comics working right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just going to even add to that.
Yeah.
They have, so you're saying working out six, you know, taking a couple shows to start working on new stuff. Zanies, is it Monday, Tuesday?
Monday and Tuesday.
Is new material night.
Yeah. They got, the showcase on Tuesday, new material on Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so is it very strict, like this is where the headliners are working out new material?
Absolutely. There's just not a lot of... not a lot of other options.
So it's going to be a little bit of a change. I know you're going to take advantage of it.
Yeah. But I mean,
I think from an audience perspective, it's okay. Because they know what they're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
They know they're going to see real comedians, great comics doing new stuff.
That's right.
So I think there's a little bit of a leeway.
There's some grace. I agree.
A grace. But yeah, you're not going to have the warm-ups to get to work out that new stuff.
No, no. And it's also like, you know, when I'm in the Comedy Cellar, it just feels like a bunch of random people. You know, in Nashville, it's like some fans are mixed in, some like, and I love in the Comedy Cellar, I like that mix. I want tourists. I want different people. That's the only reason I didn't have to move to New York.
The most universal crowds.
100%.
All over the world.
All over the world. And I know I love that because if my jokes work in that room, they're going to work anywhere. And the only things I have to kind of back off of, some of my jokes are a little too country for that crowd. And but for the most part, I'm able to work on just about whatever I want. And make it as smart as, because nobody told me to move to New York City. My team was not like, you got to get to New York if you want to. That was like a chip on my shoulder.
Sometimes it takes that kind of resistance to get you to push yourself.
Oh, 100%
forward.
Oh, 100%.
So I worked for the Stanfords and like regularly, and it used to be managed by comedians and booked by comedians, and I worked all the time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the managers didn't give a fuck about comedy. They were just cokeheads, watched college basketball. That's like, you know, they were booking people who got them coke and all that. I'm like, I stopped getting work there.
Mm-hmm.
And like my relationship with that club dwindled, and it forced me to start going out and booking my own stuff and pushing myself and working my, and I do wonder if I would have just been patted on the back, let's work them everywhere. If you just would have been comfortable, if I would, you know, and you're like, hey, I don't need to do this. I don't need to do that. Yeah. I'm getting it all here. So I do understand what you're saying. And sometimes it does take a little wall for you to find another path.
No. It was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because
got a little anger about that.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you why.
I just want to clarify. I did not bring that up.
No. This is all on my own. And the chip I have on my shoulder, I wake up with it every day. And I want people to know some people will be like, man, he hates his old. No, it just hurt my feelings. So I go, well, for me, I want to see how real this is. If I'm worth anything, I should be able to go to New York City. And when I went to New York City, I'll never forget this, Dustin. The first week I was in New York City, I did. Esty gave me an insane amount of spots. And in hindsight, she was checking me. She was going to see what I was made of. So, I mean, one night, 7 spots. One night, 5 spots. Next night, 8 spots. And I got done. And I mean, I was ripping the room in half. I mean, really having people like Dave Attell stop me outside. And he does this to comedians. He likes, this isn't just unique to me, but he's like, hey, man, that cigarette bit sounded like Bob Dylan lyrics. He was like, it's poetic.
And for the people listening at home or in your car, wherever you are, he's talking about him when he first performed in New York at the Cellar. Go back, listen to his other episode. He actually talks about the first time he worked there, preparing for Jimmy Fallon.
Yep, that's right.
And dealing with a very severe medical condition at the time. It's a great story. Go back, listen to that as well. So.
Yeah, yeah. But no, and you're right, because I used to say all the time, if I would have gotten all the love that I probably wanted, I'd be very complacent. But it was like it pushed me, you know, and it made me a better comic. But I have what helps me in comedy is how competitive I am. I mean, I am very competitive, and not like I want to beat everybody. I'm competitive like with myself. Like I have high expectations. I have a certain level of you know, that I would never mail it in. But anyways, the Denver comedy scene made me stronger for sure.
But now you're selling out. You're selling like this everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're about to, I think this is probably in our bank. I think this is going to come out right. I think it'll line up with your special.
Nice.
March 10th.
That's right. Yeah.
Netflix.
That's right.
Derek Stroop.
Yeah. It's called Nostalgic.
Yeah. I love it. Where did you film?
At the Lyric Theater in Birmingham, Alabama. Mm. 3 shows. Yeah. It was hot shows. Home crowd. Was proud to do it there.
3 nights, 2 nights?
2 nights.
2 nights.
1 Friday night, 2 Saturday.
Did you do laundry between shows to wash the clothes?
No, I did not.
So we remember that, watching that.
Yeah, that's right.
Some of those shots.
That's so funny. Yeah, the first day, they told me, we had kind of an idea about wardrobe, but I showed up ready to shoot in red pants, and I got shot down. I was pumped. I was going to do red pants, black shirt, but no, it could not have gone any better. I did it with 800-pound gorilla, and Netflix helped produce it, so it was great.
800-pound gorilla is who, and associated to Nate. I remember that's. Can I mention Greg Warren a little bit?
Of course.
You know, because he works with Nate too. We had 14 sold out shows.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I remember when he started popping. He did, and started. When he decided, I'm going to utilize social media. I'm an old dog trying the new fucking game.
Right? Yeah.
And it was an 800-pound gorilla special, and the way that they cut it and posted it and continue to post it.
Yeah.
Bro, that is what helped him start climbing. Absolutely. And climbing and climbing. Yeah. And climbing. And so, and you're already selling. Sorry. I don't know. Who is it? That's my kid. fuck you.
That's a great thing about editing podcasts.
Edit my ass. I'll call him back.
I love it. No, but the clips and the reels make all the difference in the world. They really do. I mean, the reels... You know, I was just talking to my marketing team, and my style of comedy plays really well for reels. The energy.
And it's like such a mirror of what the industry is right now, because it used to be you get specials and then sell tickets.
That's right.
You're selling tickets, and then they give you a special.
I got my special the old-fashioned way, which is we just sent in my hour to Netflix and was like, hey, check this out. If you like it. You know, let us know. And they got back to us like 3 days later, and they were like, we love it. We want it. And I was really proud of that because, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm feeling some type of way during this segment of our podcast. But a lot of people get Netflix in a bunch of different ways. People vouch for them. Favors are made, that sort of thing. Mine was just sent in. They liked it. They rolled it. And I'm very proud of that.
I love that.
And so I'm hoping everybody else, you know, put a lot of hard work into it. I'm hoping that, you know, it works out.
You went home to do it.
Yeah, went home to do it. Had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, had to, which is very exciting. But, yeah.
How many seats does that Lyric hold?
750.
Oh, what a great number.
What a great number.
Yeah.
No pressure on me. I didn't.
Sold out every show?
All three of them. Yeah. Pretty quick.
Paid tickets, too.
Yeah, paid tickets.
That's great.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we made the right choice going to that size venue. Could have gone bigger, but I didn't want any pressure. You know, 750 is a sweet spot for a theater, really.
Yeah.
It's a nice small, you know.
You're going to start moving to theaters?
I got a theater tour that starts in the fall.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, starts, we hit the ground running in August.
Wait, are you doing
I mean, I'm doing Salt Lake City, in May I'm doing a theater in Atlanta, and then Salt Lake City, I had a weekend like your boy Greg had, but instead of doing that many shows, we just broke it up. So I did 9 at Wise Guys, and then I've already sold 1,400 tickets to the theater November 7th.
Oh.
I got on a, I got to say, I did get on a heater like your boy Greg, but we broke it up instead of doing a residency, instead of doing a week long.
I love seeing that.
Yeah.
It's almost like.
Nate's putting money in our pocket.
He's putting
money in our pocket. I try to tell people that.
Nate's putting money in the industry's pocket.
In the industry's pocket. Even bigger and better. No, he literally is. I mean, doing these arenas, and then he's selling out. Like, I tell people.
I'm excited for his movie.
Oh, I'm in it. It's the best.
You have a spot in that?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Come on, dog. I got like 5 or 6 lines. It's so fun.
One scene, multiple scenes?
It's 2 different scenes. One scene, I'm talking to him a good bit. And then the other scene, I'm kind of like in the back, like, woo, you know, like. Just like a little cameo. He's the nicest.
What's the movie called?
Breadwinner.
When does that come out?
I think it got moved to like May 13th or May 19th. It was March 13th, but it got so much heat, Nate won a Grammy. And they go, oh, we're going to put it because May is like a really great movie month for especially family movies, kids getting out of school, yada, yada. They moved it to May. And Mandy Moore's in it. A bunch of very funny
There
people.
Is not enough comedy movies.
No, this is like that classic, you know, this is like a retake on
I'm
Mr.
glad
Mom.
It didn't just go to Netflix.
Yeah, me too. No, it's going in like a classic. You go take your kids, you get some Milk Duds, you get some popcorn.
Call it Nateflix.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my. I don't know if he knows about that, but he might love it.
His own streaming site?
Yeah.
Nateflix?
Oh, my. There's already Nateland. He's building a theme park.
You heard it here on the Comedy Club podcast.
Truly.
Dustin Kaufman.
Nateflix is pretty good.
If you use it, just come give us a weekend.
Give us a weekend.
Or a week. How about a residency?
Nate sold out 41 shows.
Dude, our goal is to sell out June.
Oh, that would
can
be...
If I can just, for 1 second, man, you know, I used to be so excited when we'd get sold out shows growing and growing. And so,
yeah.
We have sold out weeks now more often than we had sold out shows.
Oh, that's like, so great.
And then we, like what... I think we're about to do what Greg did in July. My goal right now is to sell out June.
That is
June.
That lets you know where comedy is at. It's so fun to be a part of it right now.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, and also, here's something else that's exciting. Even experts in whatever industry, they're talking about the more technology that happens, the more comedy becomes popular. It's going to be the only thing that's like a live experience that can't be, you know, automated or turned into a robot. So, I mean, it goes our direction. When people want to feel something, you know, they can go out and watch somebody crush or they can go out and watch somebody bomb, but you'll feel something.
Yeah, and if you need a hug, I'll give you a hug.
Come absolutely.
Out, have a laugh, have a drink.
Yeah.
Get a hug.
I had two people in the meet and greet line down there ask me for hugs.
Tip your staff?
Yeah.
Okay, so last night after the show, there were some girls looking at their pictures after the show, and you did this with your hands up, hands off of them, and there was four girls, and they're like, "What? His hands like that? Oh, he's married. He can't touch." And then one of the girls went, "Well, he had his hands on some other girls. Why not me?
That is so
why
funny.
Why not us?"
Yeah. It was probably because it was like, if it's like a 70-year-old named Mabel, I'll put my hand on her shoulder. You know who I learned that from? That's a Dustin Nickerson special. He's a hand floater.
I think Keanu Reeves kind of made that.
Oh, that might be originally. Yeah. And so I've seen Dustin do it. And so I'll do it some, you know, and they're right. Sometimes
but it's smart.
I don't mean anything. And really, if you can do it correctly, you don't want it to look, I mean, this is a little much, but if you can just kind of have it hovering, it feels like a classy move to me.
It does.
Yeah.
If we had more time, she gave me the 2 minute.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll throw it out there. We had somebody taking pictures. There was one lady and his hand was like this.
My goodness.
It was like this. It was this and his hand was not anywhere. But in the picture, his hand is over this. And bro, she comes out and she's like, "I don't remember, but it really looks like he's tough." And I'm like, and she tried to say, I'm like, you don't remember.
Yeah.
So yeah. Hands up. Don't even fuck with
it. Yeah, young comics, that's the advice I'll give you.
Don't touch anybody.
Yeah, that's right.
What's your socials?
Oh, yeah, Derek Yells. That's my socials for everything. DerekStroopComedy.com. That's where you can get the tickets. And, I'm out there. I'm a road dog for sure, so you'll find me.
I love it. I love you.
Love you, buddy.
I can't wait to see you again. Have you come back?
Absolutely.
Just, congratulations on everything.
Thank you, man.
And
thank
your
you.
New baby and your beautiful wife.
Yeah.
Come subscribe. Go watch his last episode. Derek Stroop.
Thank you.
Find him in a town, in a club, in a theater, on the movie theaters, TV, streaming, whatever. He's everywhere.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.